there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, I'm publishing this one out of order. As you probably know, I've always got a few months backlog of episodes to be published here on the podcast, but this JREP session was recorded just a couple of days ago. And the reason that I'm publishing it straight away is because Blanca and Tracy were discussing a very exciting event that they'll be attending and speaking at next week. And there are still tickets available for it in case any of you are interested in attending. So I thought I'd give you all the chance to learn about it if you haven't yet. This is the Future Conference, FEW. It's a 41-year-old organization based in Tokyo. Their initials stand for Empowering Women, which is literally what the organization does, with great success. This one's promising to be a fantastic event, and we'll link to it in this episode's show notes. So if you are interested and you are in Tokyo or want to tune in virtually, that's next Friday, 7th June 2024. Feel free to click the link and reserve your tickets before they run out. Okay, so as you might have guessed, this episode that you're just about to listen to has a lot to do with women in Japan. We hear from Tracy and Blanca about their experience running a company here as foreign female entrepreneurs, dealing with traditional Japanese male contractors, workers, and clients who have issues. Let's leave it at that for now. And the broader challenges that women face in gaining leadership positions in Japan. We then changed topics a bit and we discussed current market prices, low interest rates, financing, currency exchange, and multi-currency accounts, and a whole lot more. So enjoy the conversation and I'll see you again on the other side. The Japan Real Estate Experts panel, I don't think I've seen all of us on the same screen for about 6 months or something. Not since the conference, definitely.
Well, that was February, anyway.
That was April.
April. How time flies when you're having fun.
Yes.
What have you been up to? Talk, especially you, Blanca. You, I haven't seen on the screen in like years.
Yeah. I've been busy. I've been trying to fix the company. I've been trying to, find new people to work with, create more diverse contractors. And finding new suppliers. So I've been really, really busy with the company and busy with marketing our other companies. So it's been quite hectic. And somehow, at some point, first of all, I didn't want it to be recording when I was not sure about what's going to happen. And then, it was just so busy. So I couldn't be here.
So we've never told anyone about that, by the way. You just went on the record with that for the first time.
Yes. It's not easy. Sometimes when you work with people, and I mean this very nicely, but as a woman and as a foreign woman, to be owning and running a company, you don't always get the best support from the Japanese men, workers, contractors, because they just somehow don't want to take directions from a woman. Yeah. They don't want to, work for a woman or take orders, God forbid. And it's been challenging. I'm not going to lie to you. At some point, I actually thought maybe I'll close it down. But then, you know, I'm not a quitter, so.
You are definitely not a quitter.
Blanca, I don't think this is, you know, we're sitting here with two very progressive men, and they, you know, they hear us when we yeah. talk about our
they
experience.
They are foreigners as well.
And they actually believe us. But there is a lot of people out there who, you know, they haven't had our lived experience, and they haven't seen what we go through as foreign women yeah. executives. And it's because it doesn't happen to them, they go, oh, it's nothing, you know, you're imagining it, or, you know, but it, like, it is real. And
it's real.
That's
just foreigners, by the way. Chica got used to it over the years, and now she puts people in their place very quickly. But the initial reaction from Japanese, even to a Japanese shacho, is not nice.
Japanese yeah. woman, exactly. Yeah. And that's really unfortunate that people are blinded by gender and not actually yeah. listening to the content of what we're doing and actually seeing what we're building and seeing our values, and just sort of making a lot of assumptions based on what we look like or what we sound like. And that's unfortunate, but it is changing because of good hopefully. Men like we have here as well, who are our allies. Yeah.
I just wish more of the Japanese men, because we live in Japan and we work in Japan. I just wish more of the Japanese men and businessmen would realize that woman is more than somebody that cooks a meal and waits.
Oh, man, they don't have a clue on what they're missing on. I don't know. Like, we do have a couple of, like, 2 out of 8 staffers that we have now are men, and they're awesome. But it is so much easier to find a talented, bilingual, clever woman in Japan than it is. So no offense to our Japanese male viewers, but you guys don't know what you're missing by not working with these women.
Unfortunately, that's the truth. So I've been dealing with that. And then, you know, when you get through so much stress, your health takes a toll. So then you have to sort that out before you can come and, you know, bring your best to everything. So
I saw a post on LinkedIn just this morning, actually, about Tokyo University. Apparently, like, you know, a few decades ago, Tokyo University intake of women was 10%. Now it's up to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Still low, but for Toyota. But they were, and this just this morning I saw on LinkedIn, they had a poster, a new sort of anti-discrimination type of poster that they posted for Tokyo University, and had a woman with all the kind of, and it was written in Japanese, all the kinds of slogans and words that discriminatory or comments that people say that affect it. And so it was interesting reading it, and I had the English translation of them, like, oh, no guy wants to marry a woman who went to Todai, or it's okay if you don't succeed because you can just marry someone who's rich. And I was reading through them, and I was just kind of blown away. And this happened a few times with me where I'm like, maybe it's the environment I'm in or the people I surround myself with, but I've never heard these kind of comments or these kind of sentiments. And it's actually eye-opening for me, because I'm like, oh, wow, okay, this is, it's educational. I'm like, oh, this is what, you know, people, this is the environment for some people. I think it brings awareness to someone like myself, who in my day-to-day life I don't actually see it. I don't engage with people where I guess I have that happening. In the real estate industry as well, women tend to be pretty involved. In the Japanese one, it is less, like, definitely more male dominated, but there are still very successful women in that business. Whereas and in the West, very much it's like almost 50-50, if not more, women realtors. So in my kind of work, there's lots of very strong, confident, successful women in the line of business. So if a man, there's no real male dominated area within it that I see. So just strange that, you know, like, it just brought some awareness to me, because in my environment I don't suffer from it and I don't get it.
No, I hang up on a client last week because he was basically telling me why am I even doing anything, since I am a woman, I am a wife, and my husband clearly has money. Like, you know, so why?
A foreigner male.
No, Japanese. And he was like, and why am I, so why would I not, why am I working? And if I'm working, why am I trying to work for profit? That I should be basically doing the job for him for free, because my husband already has money, so I don't need money. And I was like, you know what? Just find a different company, because I can't deal with this. And
I just a potential client, I hope, not an actual one that you're working with, right?
No. I hang up. I'm not taking jobs from anybody like that. What kind of nonsense is that? It's like, what the hell? Because it's like, am I not going to pay the workers? Or am I going to pay the workers that will work on your thing for free, like from my own money, so you can have something cheap or for free? Like he literally thought we will do wallpaper in his room, material and labor and all the expenses, 30,000 yen per room. Yes.
Wow.
And I was like, what? That doesn't even pay for the labor.
No.
And he's like, what do you mean? Your workers' labor cost 30,000 yen? Yeah. You don't need to pay them that much.
He's not your customer.
He's not my customer. So
And
it was very funny. So
It's unfortunate. I mean, it's unfortunate, but we're not, you know, the way I look at it is like we're not going to make any changes to the world globally. We can only influence the sphere that we can and just do the best that we can. And, you know, I'm not political and I'm not, you know, there to bang a drum or whatever, but I'm just going to do what I do and look for talent where I can. And
I don't want to change the world. I want to capitalize on the fact that nobody is hiring these women, because we get our best efforts. Sorry, no offense.
Japan has a huge problem with that, because as you know, Tracy, as you know, I had lunch with Koike-san in June for the International Women's Day.
So Koike-san, Koike-san, she's the governor. She's the current governor of Tokyo, and she is badass. Like she runs an economy that is as big as California or something. So it is she's badass.
She is amazing.
Yeah,
but she was saying that, you know, that is the major problem in Japan right now. They are trying to bring up women into leadership, whether it is companies or even, you know, local politics, you know, the communities and everything. And the basic problem is, as much as they are trying, they are right now somewhere around 30%, maybe not even up to, because there are simply no women in many industries, because those women were just not raised to a position.
Mm.
So... You know,
I just see the opportunities for me. You know, I don't work corporate. I don't work government. I'm not interested in that. I'm quite happy to be an entrepreneur in the space that I'm at, because I'm earning a shit ton of money. Like, I don't want to change the world. I'm just happy. But I think it's really hard when you don't have the same choices.
Yeah, so. But luckily, for example, you have a husband and a family system where you are supported in that, being a kick-ass woman. And I see it in many things, and you'll be very surprised how I see it even in a foreign community. I am a part of that would very often complain that there is no women in specific positions, but women are not allowed in the room.
Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our J-Rep sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area, so Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's ARK Reform, all one word, .com. and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
How can you sit at the table or demand your space at the table if you are not even let into the room?
That's like the forum for a gender equality that we talked about a few months ago. And that was
it's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And that's how it is. It's like, you know, if the head of women's equality is a man, that tells you everything about it. And often men would prefer to tell you how to do that because they think they know better. So, yeah. So we're going to have a lot of fun, you know, going forward with everything. Because, I'm here to stay. So
you're involved in the, Few? Can you just, I guess we're on the topic of it.
This is probably not going to go to air before next week, but Blanca and I are actually speaking at the women's conference next Friday at the Four Seasons.
Do you want to sell tickets? I can publish it earlier if you want me to.
We're nearly full. We're nearly full. But yeah, there's still some space, I think. There's a day program as well as an evening program. The day program is women only, and there's politicians. We've actually got a message being like sent in from Koike-san, and we've got Domoto Akiko, who is the governor of Nagano, who's speaking. We've got international keynotes coming in, different panels, nonprofit. So, yeah, it's women only during the day, and then in the evening there's a gala, which is all gender. So, that would be great. It's also available virtually. There are virtual tickets available as well. So if you just want to watch the talks that are on in either the ball, there's three spaces going concurrently. One of them is the ballroom, and that's sort of got really the political stuff and the corporate governance things. And then there's the small meeting room, which is sort of more specialized, sort of nonprofit. We're speaking in the smaller meeting room. And then in the chapel going on is things like workshops, sort of personal development, and that's not streamed. So that's not because, you know, for privacy reasons, but.
Is that again, Tracy?
Next Friday, the June 7th at the Four Seasons Hotel. It's the Few Japan it's called the Future Conference, and it has morphed from the career strategy seminar. So it was really for people to see women who are doing really interesting things, that are actually having unusual journeys, that are career journeys that are not what you would expect. Actually, all of us have, you know, even though you think, oh, that we're not a monolith, right? Like everyone has their own story. We've all come to where we are from different ways. And there's as many stories as there are women. And this is for other women to see, oh, such and such person's doing that. Does that mean I can do that? It's like, yeah, you can do that. So it's really just showcasing a whole breadth of what is available, and then letting, you know, giving other people permission to break out of, like, let's say you've been an English teacher and you don't think you've got any other opportunity. Well, hang on, you're creative. Let's put you in front of a creative and see how that person has developed their career. So that's the goal, is to just showcase lots of different role models, have juicy discussions. There's VCs coming, there's you can come pitch, you can all sorts of things. So it's not just sitting around like knitting and like swapping recipes,
because this is what women do in conferences. They sit down and knit.
That's what we do.
Send me the link and then I will publish this episode.
Sure. I mean, we just exchange dating tips, and all we talk about is the meta network. Like this is really, really, you know, this is a really interesting. And most women just get on with it, right? We're brought up, we know what the rules are. We're brought up in a world where it's not really made for us. We know that, and so what we do is we forge our own paths based on what's available to us. So,
I think that adversity is one of the things that make women a bit more capable in a lot of positions than men, because you've dealt with shit that we haven't had to deal with. I go to, now with the new company, we go to a relocation conference in Singapore every year. Mm-hmm. And the first time I went was last year. And I guess because of the nature of HR managers in big companies tend to be women, at least in the Western world, more than men. And yeah. I walked in there and like, this is refreshing. Like coming from Japan, there's so many powerhouse women everywhere. This is awesome. And then I'm like to my partner, you got to come with me next year because you can talk to them so much better than I can.
Yeah.
The same is with like real estate conferences in Australia and America. It's such a, like, just the audience is so colorful.
Mm.
In Japan, everyone just got, like, you know, gray suits. It was like a Toyota factory line. In the West, it's like, yeah, just, you know, 50 to 70% would be female and just colorful like you ladies today. It's a very different experience walking into
just it. On a side note, some of the Japanese investors that Chikako-san mingles with on a more regular basis, that the best ones, the sharpest ones out there are women as well. Usually either single or divorced for a very long time. Like they left the husbands by the wayside a long, long time ago, but they are amazing.
Mm. Yeah. Look, I think as a species, you know, yes, women have like a really forging ahead right now. But we need, like, as a species, we also, you know, need men to come along too. And like, you know, rather than just stand around going, oh shit, where's my privilege gone? Right. Like, you know,
we still got a few decades of catching up before there's going to be an issue.
This is so amazing. This is so funny because I just read, there was like a simple quote saying that we've spent the past decades, teaching women how to be empowered. Mm. But we did not teach the men
how
to live or deal with empowered women. And that's what's happening. And it's a problem everywhere. But so yeah. I just think like I'm blessed. I know you're blessed. My husband actually changed.
We can his catch ticket. Up. It's okay.
No, my husband changed. For example, he changed his ticket to be there at the conference, at the gala, because it's like he was not supposed to be here. But he was like, no. You know, I was telling Tracy I bought tickets late because I was like, Kingsley's most probably not going to be here. And he was like, no, we gotta go. I'm going. So, you know, because
our table is going to be a hoot, Blanca. It's going to be a hoot because we've got Sasha and we've got, you know, like,
so looking forward to it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So anyway, we can keep talking real estate. That's fine. So
yes,
I'm getting, I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting a lot of people like, you know, picking my brains, going, you know, I'm a digital nomad. I want to have a place here in Japan. It's really getting to be a dull roar. And I'm really having a lot of meetings with people telling them the process of like buying a property here and like then, you know, I talk about 50% of people out of it because it is, you know, if it's not just a matter of buying a house and then getting it run as a short-term rental. So I've just, you know, wanted to open people's eyes about that. And if they're not scared off by the actual process, the squeeze is worth the juice. It's not as easy as people think. It's
a very active squeeze, though. Not like sit there and wait for it.
One person I want to blame for all of this, or a large portion of it, is the guy
who wrote
this.
It's Anton.
Where are you, brother?
I love you, Anton, but you got people going crazy.
Yeah. This book, but my God, the amount of inquiries, like, hey, I want a free house, and I'm going to...
Yeah. Yeah, I get a good amount of inquiries these days.
For $1 million, like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
No.
I read about you in Anton's book as becoming a bit of a catchphrase recently.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they don't realize that Anton does all these things, a lot of these things himself, because he can. And then all of them, they just like, okay, so great, I'm going to buy an Akiya. It's only a few million yen. Perfect. You know, I'm going to make a lot of money. And I'm like, have you seen it? Like, how are you going to do it? Are you going to do it yourself? Do you have the time?
I think we've done a pretty good job at explaining that to people repeatedly.
People don't listen to that.
No, but I mean, these days, a lot of people actually start the conversation with me, like the first conversation is, don't worry, I've listened to the podcast. We're not planning to rent it out on Airbnb. And, okay, you have been listening. Good job.
And you know it's going to cost you money to fix it.
Well,
It's hilarious.
At the April summit we just held, Anton, when he was speaking, actually addressed this point exactly. He goes, so many people, they want to come and just... get one, invest it, fix it up, and then just make money, profit off it. And he said, like, why would you want to get an akiya if you don't want to be involved in the community, don't want to be involved in the process and help sort of the
I tell
area?
you guys.
Well, there's room for that. I mean, Tracy's customers are doing that without living here. I mean, it's not that there's no room for that, but just be aware of what's involved, right?
Oh, no,
yeah.
But with the Akiya aspect, right? And the other actual interesting thing is he's got a place now near Shinjuku, the one he's posting a lot on of doing the renovations and the repairs and stuff. And he even mentioned that the lady who had bought it, that he bought it off, initially bought it cheaply because her intention was to do it as an Airbnb. And she bought it and then realized she can't get the Airbnb license, or she can't do it. She didn't do her due diligence with the property itself, and that's why I had to let it go at a discounted price, which is what Anton sort of jumped on it. But that as well, just like, I get lots of inquiries and I tell people, look, the due diligence on finding a place that is okay for Airbnb is very difficult, because it changes ward by ward. So I don't do that. When I get inquiries saying, hey, I want to buy a house that I can just rent out on Airbnb or a property for that, I'm like, yeah, no, the due diligence is too complex. I can
Oh,
find a
I
place.
should share actually. We've got I'll bring him on the podcast as well. We've got a new business partner. The company's called Smart Inn. His name is Shun Matsky. I was actually introduced to him by Stephen from Airbnb. He was here on the JREP podcast a couple of times. And they will, because now what we tell people is exactly the same thing. Like if one of the main criteria is for you to rent the property out short term, either when you're not using it or even, as a general investment goal, before we start looking for properties, you want to investigate the local municipality regulations in order of priority and tell us which one you want to go for. And then we have to look for properties that will potentially comply with that, right? Because if we're like within 300 meters to a school, there's no amount of renovation that we can do to fix that. And so Shun Smart Inn, Shun Matsky-san, his company will research individual municipalities all over Japan on behalf of people for a very affordable price, like 10,000 yen per municipality researched. And then for 20,000 yen, sorry, 20,000 yen per municipality research, for 10,000 yen per property, he'll then tell you if that particular potential property that you're considering is likely to receive the license or not. And after you purchase the property, they can also, as long as they can get cleaning crews in that area, they can also remotely manage it for you. So these days,
I need this
anywhere.
man's name,
Yes.
because this is, I'm, yeah, I need this gut person's name because I really, I'm having four or five calls a week, and I'm putting them to like a Shiho Shoshi, and she's charging 50,000 yen to do the due diligence because she's going to the ward office and she's going getting the report and she's saying, well, this is what you need to do, and if I can give people the,
I
the
love how you're saying she back to our conversation about women. You have a lady, Shihoshoshi. That one we don't have yet.
I do. Well, she's taken over. So it was her dad's practice, and she's taking over her dad's practice. And so he's transitioning to retirement, and she's coming on board. I primarily I seem to employ a lot of women. It's not that to the exclusion of anyone else. I'm, interested in talent, but I just do believe that there are a lot of like there's a lot of talent at home. And I'm really family friendly and I'm flexible and I'm the easiest boss in the world. So I'm happy if people want to do their work at like midnight, that's great. Or if they want to do it, what I don't care. Nothing I'm doing is mission critical. Well, nothing I'm needing like my assistance or anything to do is mission critical. So
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing.
They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. AkiyaMart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off AkiyaMart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
And I find that it's just a really good job for women. So,
yeah. So I'll put you in touch with him, Trey, because these days.
Oh, that's great. I'm
Tokyo,
happy.
Yeah, Tokyo and Kanto, I send your way, and everybody else, I send his way.
Perfect. I actually had a question from somebody yesterday that was asking me, what do we think about properties in Okinawa? Because there is a lot of new construction and everything going on, but a lot of the apartments seem to be empty. So
I'm actually curious about that.
What is the trend? If anybody from us know, what's the trend with Okinawa?
Short-term rental or for
more or more like a combo of, because the person is a resident here. It's a mixed family, Japanese friend family living here, but they used to live in Okinawa and they are kind of interested of, okay, maybe they would buy a second home in Okinawa for themselves, but when they are not there, they'll be interested in short-term rentals. So they were kind of asking, so do you think that, because right now the prices are kind of going up, do you think that because a lot of the properties are empty, do you think that the price would possibly go down or not? Or, you know, do you think it's even going to go further than that because of the influx of the American dollars?
Speculation, the best kind of question.
Yeah, I tend to avoid speculating on what property prices will do or not because it's anyone's guess. But I can say logistically in Okinawa, we do occasionally get asked about it. We haven't facilitated any deals yet there in about 13 years of business now. And it's mainly because, like, there seems to be a huge price disparity between anything in Naha and close to U.S. military bases and everything else in Okinawa, which is dirt cheap. And also realtors there for some reason. Yeah. Once you get away from the big cities and the U.S. Army bases, properties are like as cheap as anywhere in the Japanese countryside.
Really? Even beachfront properties?
Oh, no. Beachfront is beachfront. I'm not talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
I think that's basically what she was going like, or close proximity to the beach,
yes.
If not a beachfront property.
But agents there are weird. They put very little information on listings for some reason, sometimes not even the build year or the size of the property, and they're not nearly as responsive as Japanese agents in other parts of the country. I'm not sure why that is. Island mentality, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, island mentality, I think that's... at least like my husband would tell you, he can see the difference even as an employer, employing people that are from Okinawa. They are very different in a work mentality than people that are
from... Kudos to them. I hope the entire country would be like that. I'm not complaining about people with island mentality. I like...
Yeah, but it's a little bit difficult when it comes to when you're employing them. But yeah, they are more laid back. They're not really in a hurry to do anything. And, you know,
I'm in the process right now of just booking my trip, my hotel. We're going to Fiji this coming Christmas.
Ooh.
We were there just last New Year as well. It's our new favorite place. We love it. We went for the first time sort of for New Year. And so I found cheap flights for Christmas time. So we're going again for this Christmas and I'm booking. But I just, that island mentality, when we were there the other day, last year, I was running from my cabin. It's a big resort. I was running from my cabin to one of the boat ramps, because, you know, it was going to leave and we had a tour sort of planned. So I was running and just one of the ladies, like one of the guests there, just go, as I run past, she goes, "That's not Bulla time." So bula means like in Fiji, is like means like hello or the welcome greeting. And that's not bula time. So they call it bula time, is sort of that island time where everything is chill, everything is like relaxed. And when we went to the boat, like, I mean, it hadn't even arrived yet. It's like it came like 20 minutes after the scheduled departure time. So yeah, very much a different.
I'm going to my island in 2 weeks' time. I'll see you all again in mid-July.
Thailand?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm going to Thailand in August.
Hey, and then we're all going back to our conference in October, hopefully, right? No one's got any travel plans for October, I hope.
I was put on hold with all the travels for the, besides, except Europe in summer, of course. But then because basically the child is going to be doing Duken in January,
good luck.
He told me, Mama, no travels this year.
My son said the same thing. It's like in August, I can't go anywhere for more than a week because I got to
study.
Jesus yeah. Christ.
He is willing to do the month with me in Europe in July, August, because that's what we always do. But that's basically the last thing he's willing to do. I wanted to go to Fiji in October for my husband's birthday. Mm-hmm. But that would mean I would have to take him from school because I'm not going to go there for 3 days, obviously. So I would take him from school for another extra 2 days. And he's like, nope, no. He refused modeling jobs because he's like, I have to go to school now. Please do not book me any jobs that are during the school week.
Are you handling his bookings? Are you his agent?
Of course, yes.
Oh, okay.
She's not going to outsource that.
And no travels and no travels or shogatsu. So we are not going anywhere over Christmas, which is killing me. But I have to respect.
Oh, wait, what do you mean we? You can still go. He can stay home and study.
I would never leave my child.
I leave my child any day of the week with pleasure. Now he's actually saying he wants to go to Thailand too.
Ask Chikako. Chikako would not leave him at home.
Chikako doesn't leave him at home for concern to the home, not to the child.
but Blanca, how old is your son again?
So he's 14. He's going to be 15 in September. So he is Chusan.
Yeah, Chusan. Okay, he's going to Koko.
He's going to go to Koko. And because, of course, he is my son, he chose very competitive Koko. He has a backup accepted already in case he wants to study abroad. That's what we've done last month. So he does have, if we decide that he would study abroad, that one is sorted. But he has 3 quite competitive high schools here in, you know, Kanto, basically Tokyo, Matsudo, Tokyo. And he would prefer to do that. So no travels. So mama can, you know, at one side, it's good. I can focus on work. And
Ori was saying that too. He was saying, I want to go to international school. Like, mate, you got free schooling in Australia. That's as international as you're going to get over there if you want.
Yeah, we're going there in August again to Australia for a month for that one month of Aussie education.
So I'm looking forward at least to Europe trip and then basically no trips.
Yeah. I just want to quickly jump back on that point about, you know, we're talking about speculation about house prices in Okinawa. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the same question I get for Tokyo and anywhere. Prices seem to be increasing now. Is now a good time to buy or should I wait for the dip? I had that exact same question. I remember it clearly when I started doing these real estate seminars, the Foreigner's Guide to Buying a House in Japan, in 2014. So the Tokyo Olympics, I think, were announced in 2013 when Tokyo got it as the host. And that's when Abenomics was starting. So lots of, you know, promotion for that, if we all remember that term.
Yeah.
And in 2014, the year after it was announced, in one of my seminars, we had about, like, you know, 15 people around the table in the seminar room. And one of the guys said, maybe now's, because prices have been increasing for like 2 years, 3 years, maybe now's not a good time. They're pretty high. They've been constantly increasing. Let me buy the post-Olympic dip. Huh. And this is 2014, 2015, he said this. Let me buy the post-Olympic dip. And everyone knows if you had bought in 2013, any time before today, you would have, it's constantly gone up. It hasn't dipped. even with the Olympics that weren't
and that COVID, weren't happening,
there was no dip.
You can never tell. It's the same with exchange rates, right? Like people are constantly asking, like the yen is so low now. Should I transfer my money now, or because it might drop more? Like it's the lowest it's been since 1980 or 1990. It's low enough. Just get the bloody yens. Who knows what the future will bring?
Exactly. If it drops anymore, there's going to be a total exodus of foreigners in this country, because it's basically it's like the most expensive for all of us that's ever been.
Thailand is definitely not cheaper than Japan anymore. Hotel prices still are, but nothing else.
It's crazy.
Well, I tell people, like, just quickly to finish that point, at any stage historically, it's like, yes, it's more expensive now than it has been sort of in recent years, so, but is it now, should you wait for a dip or a correction or not? In any time historically, the past, you know, decade at least, at no stage would it have been better to wait for the dip, because there has been no dip. So what that means for the future, I don't know, but
I mean, the small temporary dips,
the time you have the money for it.
You can't define that.
But those dips are not like, what, 0.2%? Like, nothing, there's no real, nothing significant.
No.
Actually is... can justify it. But I do, back to the point about the interest rates, what I tell people is, like, my perspective on it is Japan interest rates are low, Japan yen is very low because interest rates are very low. You know, when you have 5%, the US Treasury bonds are giving you 5%, that's a better deal than putting it in a Japanese yen and getting 0.001.
Yeah.
So, because of the low yen, low interest rates in Japan, that's one of the reasons that we're suffering the low yen. My thinking is, if you're in Japan and you're suffering from getting paid in low yen, you should at least take advantage of low interest rates. If you're getting paid in yen and suffering the low yen because of low interest rates, and you're not taking advantage of the basically free money that is available to you, you're suffering the... You're adding insult to injury. You should at least take advantage of the low yen, a low interest rate rather. And that's why I like getting mortgages, because you can get 0.2%, 0.3% free money available to you. So the yen is low, but guess what? You can borrow for free. What's causing it to be low is available as financing to you, where it's not for someone outside. So if you're going to...
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
So if you're going to suffer getting paid in low value yen, at least don't suffer and not take advantage of the low interest rate.
I'm sorry, for the second or for the second properties or whatever, second homes, the interest rate is what? If somebody would want to take a mortgage on that one, that's around 4?
No. Usually it'll be more like 2%, 1.7 to 2%. Not 4. Yeah, not doing 4. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that ridiculous. But you tell that to an American or a European, they're like 4%. I'll sign up. Where do I sign?
Yeah. Precisely. But one thing to keep in mind, Blanca, is you can actually get a second loan at the 0.2-0.3%, but only if your borrowing capacity extends that far. So let's say
you paid off some of your previous, or you still had some left over.
Yeah, more left over. Or what happens more is people's salaries increase, not they've paid off some. So the simple rule of thumb is you can borrow about 8 times your annual income. So if you earn 10 million yen a year, you can borrow 80 million yen from the bank based on a 35-year loan. Okay. And how they actually calculate it is based on the monthly loan repayments. Right, the back of the envelope calculation is about 8 times your annual income. It used to be 7, they've extended it. You can borrow a bit more, 8 times your annual income. So you can borrow 80 million yen. Now, let's say for your first house, you borrowed 50 million yen 10 years ago, right? You borrowed 50 million yen. You still have 30 million yen of borrowing capacity. Even if you've paid off, 20 million yen of your 50 million yen loan, your monthly repayments are still based on a 50 million yen borrowing. So your monthly obligation is based on a 50 million yen equivalent, which is why it lowers your borrowing. Your borrowing capacity is always going to be lowered by 50 million yen. So what happens is if, let's say you're on a 10 million yen salary, your first house was 50 mil, you have still 30 million yen of borrowing capacity for another property. But generally what happens in the situation that I see more with my clients is they bought their first place for 50, but now their salary is 15 or 20 million yen, because it's 10 years, they've gotten older, they're late 40s, they've got more borrowing capacity, they've just got more income. So now the bank says, well, the total you can borrow is based on your income capacity is 150 million. You've already used 50 million for your previous house, so you have another 100 million of borrowing capacity left. So you could possibly buy another property as the intention is it's your primary residence.
Then you could move your primary residence from the old property to your new property.
Correct. If your employment is here in Tokyo and you're buying a holiday house in Nagano, that could be questioned a bit. Depends on the story you want to tell the bank. And if you say, look, I'm going to work fully remote, that is going to be my primary residence, uncertain what I'm going to do with the first one. I have seen some situations where they've accepted that, but these are not really with the Nagano, like these kind of holiday homes, but rather with, a second property in Tokyo. Generally what's happened also, the general thing is people will either outgrow it. So maybe it was a 2-bedroom or a 3-bedroom, their family has grown and it's a few years later and they're like, you know what, we need a bigger place. Our kids are older, they need their own separate bedrooms. But my income's 10 million yen more. So then when they bought it when they were 30, they're now 42, right? And, more of a business, succeeded more in their career, etc. So they'll just buy a bigger place and rent out the first one is one option that I see. Or the one where they want to downsize. The kids have moved out of the house or the 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom place. The kids have moved out. So, we're good with just a simple apartment, a mansion, a 2-bedroom mansion. So that's the other scenario, but again, in Tokyo. And rather than sell the first one, they'll just rent it out because they have enough borrowing capacity to buy a new place. And maybe if they have to do any cash contribution, they've got enough cash savings that they can cover any difference. But that's generally what I see people do with their extended borrowing capacity. they turn their previous home into an investment and buy the more suitable one for this stage in their life. I haven't dealt with too many buying just holiday houses doing that.
And also with your cash savings, the advantage that we have as foreigners is that we usually have access to at least one other currency as a on a regular basis. So, I mean, there's so many ways to do it, but the easiest one is with like a Wise or something similar, multi-currency account. Whenever the rates swing this way or the other, just transfer funds over. You'll make a lot more than you'll make on any term deposit, kind of locking them away kind of thing.
Yeah, if you want to play the FX kind of game, like I know my Citibank account, I know Wise does it now as well, even more efficiently. My Citibank, it used to be Citibank, now it's Prestia. They have a multi-money account.
Mm.
So people often say, look, now's a good time to send money over. Like if I've got, when the US dollar was low, Japanese yen's high, I got to send money to Australia. I got to send it to the US. Mm. Well, now let me send money from the US back to Japan. You don't have to do those international transfers. Just within your one multi-money account.
Yes.
I've got Japanese yen. Okay, I want to buy
US. Not the banks, though. I would go with one of the Forex providers for the multi-currency account, because the banks will always sting you by at least 3 to 5 yen to the dollar compared to those.
Not so much. I think Wise now is probably one of the new people in the markets. But for people that don't have an FX account, right, just, you know, for the most part, I think a multi-money, a multi-currency.
Oh, it's better than nothing. But I mean, signing up with Wise and OFX and all the rest of them, it's like a 5-minute documentation thing, a few phone calls and you're on. So
But the concept is the same within the one account.
Yes.
Just a million Japanese yen. Oh, now's a good time to buy. Well, let's say I got $10,000.
Yep.
I want to convert that just within the same account.
Mm.
Convert whatever the current exchange rate is to Japanese yen.
Yep.
And it's still in the same account. It hasn't been sent. There's no international transfer fees or wire fees.
You've got access to it at any time. Yeah.
And it's, they're completely within the same account. The costs of receiving, it's minimal. It's just whatever the transaction cost is. I have done a comparison. Recently, I wanted to send money to Australia. What happened was I was sending, my family was living in Australia, my wife and kids, all of last year. So I had to frequently send money back, just a regular living expense.
Yeah.
And so what I would check is, okay, with my Prestia account actually has free international transfers. So I can send, it's like 4,000 yen, whatever, it's free. But just based on the exchange rate, I can see if I would do this transaction to send it, convert to Australian dollars and then Aussie dollars transfer to Australia versus using Wise, and this is for a few thousand dollars every time, Wise was always a cheaper option.
Yeah. They're phenomenal. They're just still limited to 1 million yen transfers, so they don't work for actual property purchases, but anything else, they're the best.
Yeah, for regular stuff. But apart from that,
I'll bugger off in a minute. I'm sorry. I can make one of you hosts if you want to continue.
No, I'm going to go too. I have to drive to Tokyo now.
This was a fun conversation. Not that much about real estate, but I really enjoyed it.
Exchange rate, we
talked about few very valid points. I always love listening to Emil anyways.
Look, he's just a walking calculator.
Good stuff. And yes, I will publish this ahead of your event on Friday. So just next Friday. So just send me the link if you can, so people can actually register.
All right. Yeah. Or they can just contact me directly. It's no problem. So.
Okay. And anyone who's new to the Japan Real Estate Podcast or the JREP sessions, like and subscribe.
Also, to push myself, Tokyo Dad's podcast. It's in progress. It's getting there soon. I've been saying it for
a year. I wouldn't mention that because I've got so many mentions of that one in the last couple of years, Emil.
I got to put it out there.
It's happening. Okay.
It is.
All right, lovely humans.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you have it. Another fun session with the JREP crew. Hope you found some value in it. And again, a reminder on the Future Conference. That's Friday, 7th June in Tokyo and online. Grab your tickets today, link in this episode show notes. This should be super interesting stuff for anyone interested in Japan's gender dynamics, empowerment of women, and just generally in hearing from some serious powerhouse rock star ladies. Should be a blast.
Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!